The Business Buzz Podcast. The Business Buzz.
Good evening and welcome to the Business Buzz right here on VAWA FM 88.1. We're broadcasting live from our studios right here in Braamfontein, Johannesburg. My name is Mliwa Mob, Justice Gawaza, and I'm joined in studio by my new partner in crime. I have Hlengiwe Zondo. How are you, Hlengiwe?
I'm good, thanks, Mliwa. How are you doing?
No, I'm all right. Some of you might recognize her voice because she usually comes in here to do our Buffalo Index. But, you know, she decided that, no, listen, I'm here.
Let's do this.
So she's going to be with me until about 7 p.m. And we're going to be keeping you live and entertained. And who's to say that the world of business can't be exciting and educational and can keep you intrigued. So what does the next hour look like? We're going to be talking about health tech. How is health being affected or disrupted by the use of technology? And how are entrepreneurs finding solutions for some of the problems that we have in the health space? We're going to be having an in-studio discussion. We have Nelly Nkosile, who is from iMed Tech, together with Neo Hutiri, who is from Technovera. We're going to be talking to them because they are both entrepreneurs in the tech space that are affecting us, trying to make things better. You know, because health is something that definitely affects all of us in the world. Otherwise, we're going to be also having our business wrap. That's a part of the show where we tell you the week's top trending business and economics news. And then on the other side of that, we have our Buffalo Index. But you can keep in touch with us. Hlengiwe, how can people be talking to us out there on the social medias?
Okay, awesome. So our listeners can join us in a number of ways, and these include our social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, WhatsApp, and for Facebook, they can join us on VAWA FM, Voice of Wits, and at Wits Radio Academy.
Yeah.
And then on Twitter, our handle is at VAWA FM, and our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. So on our WhatsApp line, they can contact us on 084-078-4912, and they can also stream to the station live at www.vowfm.co.za, and podcasts of the Business Buzz are available on www.vitsjournalism.co.za/business.
Yeah.
And they must just make sure that they keep it locked until 7 p.m. tonight.
Okay, so you heard it. Make sure you keep in touch with us. Tell us some of your thoughts as the discussion is going. If any of you have actually come in contact with some of the innovations that we're going to be talking about, let us know there. Otherwise, that's how the show is looking. Make sure you keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
More justice on the Business Buzz.
This is the Business Buzz right here on VAWA FM 88.1. It's time for us to get into our business wrap. That's a part of the show where we give you the week's top trending business and economics news. And on the line, we're joined by our financial expert. We have Zanele Kunene, who is from BDO Wealth Advisors, to just give us a round up. How are you, Zanele?
I'm good, and you, Mudiwa?
I'm fine, thank you. So I understand that the MPC came out with the decision, South African Reserve Bank. What's going on with this?
Oh, yes. So a lot of the economists were saying that the interest rate will remain the same, and they were right. Can you believe it? An economist was right. So our interest rate remained at about 6.5%, and that is so good because this year alone, you know, we've had the VAT increase, we've had the petrol hikes, and we're also having the slowly increasing inflation, you know, that has burdened a lot of us. So it's quite good that they kept the interest rate where it is, so that, you know, we could remain attractive to investors. And that was one of the reasons why it remained as it was.
I've noticed that the Reserve Bank hasn't really moved interest rates in a long time. Should we be expecting this thing to go up or down anytime soon, or for the foreseeable future, is this going to remain the same, as is the status quo?
Well, they will review it in 2019, but until then, they'll remain unchanged. However, you must always consider inflation when you speak about interest rates. So because our inflation is slowly increasing, in May we were at about 4.4, and now we're at 4.6. This is the headline, consumer inflation. It does mean that as inflation is increasing, our interest rates will be affected, and they'll have to review that. next year. They'll have to review it if inflation continues to increase. But I must say this, the central bank has to keep, well, not that they have to, but they mandated, their objective is to keep inflation in the 3-6% bracket in order to like protect the value of the rand and also the purchasing power of all South Africans. So they'll keep it in that bracket. We can always start being worried if inflation is above 6% or below 3%.
So with that in mind, I heard you mentioning headline consumer inflation and core inflation. What's the difference between the two and where are we at in terms of the stats?
Alrighty, so headline inflation has to deal with, it measures the CPI basket. So it measures your fuel, your food, your energy, is basically what you put in your grocery trolley. Your core inflation, that looks at things that are not, subject to volatility, like your maize meal and your fuel prices. So core inflation looks at the other areas of our spending. So with core inflation, we were at about 4.4 in May, and now we're about 4.2%. So that decreased, and headline inflation is the only thing that increased, which means things are becoming a bit more expensive.
This is not good
news. That's due to the fuel, you know.
So in terms of all of this, what are some of the factors that we should be looking out for? You've just mentioned the fact that fuel is one of the reasons why inflation is up at the moment. What are some of the other factors that are pushing this number up?
But when I was doing my research, I realized that fuel was one of the major reasons why our inflation has increased, because that's one of the biggest spending areas for any family, for any person. That's one of the biggest areas we spend on, which is transport. But in terms of the interest rate, I just want to let everyone know that if you have a student loan or a bond or any kind of a loan, just know your repayments will remain exactly the same. And if any of your grandparents are receiving any kind of interest income, it will remain the same. The story would be different if the interest rate increased. So, yeah, so that's a bit of a good news. I just had to put it in there.
So in terms of interest rates as well, the U.S., is it increasing their interest rates? I think that's an interest rate that the rest of the world really does watch, because yes, it signals their appetite to actually invest in other countries or to just keep things domestic.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So they will be increasing the interest rate, and that will mean that if they increase the interest rate, they make it really hard to borrow money from them. So a high interest rate is encourages investment but discourages borrowing. So for countries like our emerging markets, it will be very hard for us to borrow money from the U.S., and they are the biggest borrowers. Or the biggest lenders, I mean to say. So it will be quite hard for us as an emerging market to lend money from them. It would hurt our economy. Even when they made the announcement, you know, last week we were at about 13 Rand 28 cents, and now we're at like 13 Rand 50 after this announcement. So it does affect emerging markets like your Turkeys and us when the USA decide to increase the interest rates.
So that was us on the line. We're talking to Zanele Kunene, who is our financial expert from BDO Wealth Advisors, giving us a roundup of the week's top trending business and economics news. I think the three main things that you heard her talking about is the fact that the South African Reserve Bank had the interest rate announcement earlier today, and they've decided to keep interest rates unchanged. The U.S. is set to increase their interest rates, which could affect their appetite for investing around the world and the rest of the world's ability to borrow money from the U.S. And then you heard as well that headline consumer inflation and core inflation data have gone up, mainly on the back of the fuel price hikes that we've all been experiencing in South Africa. So that's it in terms of the business buzz. On the other side of this, we tell you the state of your 100 Rand. Keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
You're tuned in to the Business Buzz.
It's time for us to get into the state of your 100 Rand with our Buffalo Index. Hlengiwe, how are we looking today?
We're looking good. So today we're going to be covering a few things. Since we're talking all things health, we're going to be looking at a few plans from medical aid companies.
Yeah.
We're going to be looking at three plans per organization.
Yeah.
The first one is Discovery.
Yeah.
And the second one is Bonitas.
Yeah.
So from the first one, we have a Bon Comprehensive, a Bon Classic, as well as a Bon Complete. The Bon Comprehensive is a first-class savings plan that offers ample savings and above-threshold benefit and extensive hospital cover, and that will cost our listener 57 buffaloes, which is 5,700 rand. And then we, and under our Bond Classic, we have a generous, said to be generous, savings option, which offers a wide range of medical benefits and in and out of hospital benefits. And that will cost our listener 40 buffaloes. The Bond Complete costs includes a savings option as well as a threshold benefit as well as a rich hospital cover, and that'll cost our listener 32 buffaloes.
Yeah.
Now moving on to Discovery, they have an executive plan, a comprehensive series, as well as a priority series. Their executive plan offers you the most extensive cover for hospital and day-to-day benefits with extended chronic medicine, which covers, you know, your chronic medication and pharmaceutical products, as well as an ultimate above the threshold benefit. And then on the comprehensive series, the first one will cost our listener 59 buffaloes as well. And then the comprehensive series is 36 buffaloes, and this is a comprehensive cover for in-hospital and day-to-day cover for extensive chronic medicine cover, as well as an unlimited above-threshold benefit. And then the last but not least, which is the priority series, this is a cost-effective in-hospital cover, an essential chronic medicine cover, and a day-to-day benefit, which also has a limited above-threshold benefit. And that will cost our listener 27 buffaloes.
So which one for you is the most cost effective?
Yeah, I'm a student and a budding entrepreneur. So
yeah.
I try to just cover the essentials. I probably would see myself on the priority series where I'm looking at 27 buffaloes because, yeah, there's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. That first level needs to be
security
even met first before I can look at, you know, the other levels. Which one would you take?
The one for 27.
Yes.
Which company was that?
That was Discovery. And
okay, fine. Yeah. I was gonna also take the Discovery one.
Is it?
Yeah.
Do you feel safe there?
I feel safe there mainly because I feel like when you walk into a hospital and you say I'm on Discovery,
they take you seriously.
And also, I had a very interesting experience a couple of years ago. I went to visit one of my friends in Cape Town.
Yeah.
Right, and then on one of the days, I was with one of our other friends, and she had a clinic appointment.
Mm-hmm.
Right, we get there, and as she's doing the thing, she brings out her medical aid card, and she's told, "Listen, we can't help you because your medical aid shut down 2 days ago."
Oh no!
And she didn't know, right?
That's the worst thing that can happen.
Yeah, I won't name the name of the medical aid company, but
yeah,
it was actually, imagine you're there, you're about to get into an appointment, and you get told that your entire medical aid, whatever you've paid for, it doesn't mean
anything.
And
you've been
anymore.
Paying premiums.
Exactly.
No, that would definitely be terrible.
So yeah, that's tough. As you heard, we are talking about healthcare and technology and how all of that is coming together to actually make our lives better. On the other side of this, we get into our main topic, and we're also going to be having a studio discussion. So keep it locked. This is The Business Buzz.
You're tuned in to The Business Buzz.
Welcome back to The Business Buzz right here on VAL FM 88.1. We are talking health and tech today on The Business Buzz. And in studio, we are joined by some entrepreneurs that are going to be telling us about how they're disrupting the health space. But before we get into all that, we wanted to understand what the health and tech space looks like from a broad macroeconomic point of view. But before we get into all of this, remember that you can keep the conversation going. Tell us what you think if you have come up with a way, or if there was a procedure in hospitals or in the healthcare space, for example, that you wish would be improved by the use of technology in some way, let us know. On Facebook, we have Vow FM, that's Voice of Vits, and then that's you can also find our own Facebook page. We have the Vits Radio Academy, that's on Facebook, and then on Twitter, that's at Vow FM, and then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. So, for us to begin, we are joined on the line by Prof. Stephen Koch, who is from the head and professor of economics with the Department of Economics at the University of Pretoria. How are you, Prof?
Oh, I'm doing quite well. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. As you heard me introducing, we just want to understand what where South Africa is in terms of the economy around health and tech at the moment, perhaps in comparison to the rest of the world. Are we actually using technology, or are there ways that we could improve this? So I guess as a point of departure, could you tell us what South Africa's economy is looking like at the moment and how technology could possibly disrupt the space?
You mean the entire macro economy?
Yes, please.
Well, as I suppose most of your listeners know, the economy is not in the greatest shape, unlike a number of other countries around the world where growth seems to be picking up and jobs seem to be becoming more available. This is not really the case here. So from an economic point of view, we've still got a little bit of work to do. Hopefully things are getting better. I think I don't really have the latest figures, but I do feel like things are getting better. So I am looking forward to better growth for the rest of the year and for the next few at least.
So from a health point of view, what does how much of a strain or of a burden is healthcare on our economy at the moment?
It depends on sort of which set of figures you look at. So the government likes to point to how much money they spend on public healthcare, and you know there's also the discussion around NHI where you know it's quite unequally distributed. So a small amount of individuals in the country are using up about half of the overall expenditure on healthcare itself. Right? So the first thing to note is that it's fairly skewed in terms of how it is used. In practice, you would probably find that in most other countries, but that would more likely be because of illness. So you would find that it doesn't take all that many people in a society to expend quite a bit of money just because of all of the procedures and all of the care and so on that they require. You know, if you watch something like Grey's Anatomy, you'll see extraordinary amounts of money, at least in principle, being spent on small groups of people. But you know, so in that sense, that's one side of the health story. Sorry. The other side of the health story is really how it affects workers and their ability to partake in a full day's work, or even take care of their family or enjoy life even. And that's a place where we are struggling. We have high levels of TB. We have high levels of obesity, which are not even particularly well. They're fairly preventable sorts of problems, and you know, so in that sense, health is actually taking quite a bite out of the economic potential here.
Perhaps lastly, very quickly, before we then continue with our entrepreneurs in the studio, do you feel like healthcare as a cost on our economy should be something that private individuals should be concerned with? Because we know that from a public economics point of view, it's considered that a large majority of the healthcare sector is considered to be a public good. So therefore, the government is the one that funds a lot of healthcare. You spoke about NHI. So should we be looking to government to be the one to be providing healthcare in the country, or is it the space for private enterprise to actually be coming in providing those services?
Well, I think the first thing to note is that the public sector, at least currently and probably for the foreseeable future and maybe forever, is never going to be able to provide all the health care that might be potentially demanded. And so what we need to do, I think, is find ways of providing health care better, cheaper, hopefully. Oftentimes that can be done with technology, but not always. And I've already said it, that efficient ways to deliver health care to people that need it, find ways to help them clean up their environment so they're not exposed to the kinds of things that make them ill. A lot of those things are also technological in their focus. So there's plenty of space, in my view, for people not involved in government. And in fact, if we want to think more carefully about how the economy is going to grow and where it might go in the future, the more private enterprise we develop, the better. Government can't sort of depend on a flow of revenue if people aren't creating opportunities for other people to work. So it's a necessity that more people are involved.
So, as you heard right there, we're talking to Prof. Stephen Koch, who is the head and professor of economics at the Department of Economics at the University of Pretoria. As you heard right there, I think a big takeaway, he's saying that government will never be able in its current state to provide completely for the health care of the people in a particular country, specifically in South Africa, and that private individuals and the private sector have a big role that they can play. On the other side of this, we are going to be talking to a certain and such private individuals who have taken it upon themselves to come up with solutions to some of the nation's big healthcare problems. Keep it locked. This is The Business Buzz.
More justice on The Business Buzz.
Welcome back. This is The Business Buzz right here on VAW FM 88.1. We are talking healthcare. As you heard, we were talking to Prof. Steve Koch, who is from the University of Pretoria, just giving us an overview of what the health sector actually looks like as a portion of the economy and who is actually responsible for providing healthcare in South Africa. It's considered to be a private good, but he is an advocate that as private individuals we should be doing more to actually make everything better. And I'm actually joined in studio and on the line I have Neo Hutiri, who is from Technovera, who is here in studio with us. He's going to be telling us a little bit about his business because today we're doing a bit of a live discussion. So let me start by saying, Neo, how are you?
I am good, I'm good, I'm good. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you so much. And then on the line, I'm also joined by Nelly Ankolise, who is from iMedTech. How are you, Neil?
I'm good, thanks, and you?
I'm fine, thank you. So, very quickly, I'm just going to first allow Nelly, please could you just tell us a little bit about iMed and how you got into the sector and the innovations that you're working on at the moment?
iMed is a company that creates medical prosthetics and bioimplants. We usually try to define ourselves using a simple thing to say that all of us as human beings, we are temporarily abled. And for us to be disabled is just an episode. So I myself want to create solution post the episode that leads to disability, be it via traumatic accidents or illnesses such as diabetes or cancer. So the reason why we started the company was because we have seen a high percentage of people who lost precious body parts due to a lot of times work with them due to cancer and traumatic accidents that we've made at hospital during the time when I was doing my academic research into the applications of additive manufacturing into the healthcare. So, I mean, as I went on with my studies, I started realizing that this cannot be just a case study that's done for research purposes. It has to be turned into a business so that the impact could be amplified and reach a lot of people.
And then, talk to us about Technovera.
So, Technovera was born out of a mission, very much a personal one, of wanting to enable patients to access chronic medication fast without spending hours and hours in queues. And how it started was very much, in 2014, I was diagnosed with TB.
Yeah.
And I was collecting medication like millions and millions of South Africans. We're always stuck with that one view of when you enter that clinic and you see that queue and your energy just goes down because you know that you're in there for a while. And if you are on chronic medication and you are spending time on a queue when you're just supposed to be managing your treatment, and that starts to become a barrier for you to say, but do I really want to subject myself to this? So I was one of those patients. I was on a treatment for 6 months, and I was facing this challenge of spending 3 hours in a queue. And we then set out to say that, okay, so how can we actually shorten this queue? How can we get somebody in and out of a facility without spending hours and hours? And what role can technology play in that? So we almost set out to solve that problem for ourselves. I would say that I'm a very, very difficult patient. I want things my way. And the idea was to say, how can we get somebody in and out of a facility in under a minute, instead of, you know, 5 hours in a queue or sometimes a whole day.
Yeah.
And I think it's a challenge that affects a lot of us who are reliant on the state side of things. I mean, you guys chatted earlier in the show about some of the costs that we have to pay on a monthly basis to be on medical aid. And the reality is that we still have a fairly unequal society in terms of access, and there is a lot of focus on other markets, but we thought that how do we make sure that an average South African who still deserves good service, still deserves access to their medicine, can still be served? And Technovera was very much on the premise of that. How can we use technology for social good, and how can we build systems that respect our people, that are quite authentic, and that are speak to what we need.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to bring Nelly in here very quickly because you spoke about research earlier on, and Nell was now bringing in the idea of costs. And the question I wanted to ask both of you, because you both have products that you've developed and are producing, is how much in terms of the cost itself of research and development, because we hear that in the pharma industry, for example, that it takes $1 billion, for example, just to bring a drug to market. So for you in prosthesis and in terms of Technovera, like, what are those costs like? Because I'm sure there are listeners out there who are saying to themselves, I have an idea and I want to bring it to market, but I am afraid, or I feel like I don't have access to that capital. So one, how have you tackled that? And two, what are some of the channels of funding that you have used? I'm going to start with Nelly.
You know, the nice thing is research is a very integral part of what we do every day. And I mean, in the medtech industry, the biggest chunk of the budget as you plan for long term has to always be in R&D. And I mean, I was lucky enough that I was part of an institution of higher learning where they had dedicated funds to research through the support of the Department of Science and Technology, institutions such as TIA. So I mean, I got to get some opportunities in there for me to do research and to discover if I could be able to build a strong business case. That's why whenever you want to build a business such as this, you always need to attach yourself with institutions of higher learning, because you need people to support you, not just in research, but this is a very capital intensive business that you do. So you can never just thrive on your own. You always need the support from institutions that either have the resources like equipment or they have the brainware, such as professors who have been in the industry who understand the ins and outs that could mentor you and support you.
Now, are you also of the mind that attaching yourself to a institution of higher learning, for example, is the way forward? How did you do this thing?
So I think there are different paths, right?
Yeah.
And mine is a little bit different from Naily's one. So mine started with being able to say, let me just get out of the door and go figure it out as I go along, right?
Yeah.
And I think you talked about somebody who's sitting and saying, I want to do something and not being very, how can I say, challenged by the mountain that they have to climb.
Yeah.
And we started off looking at who are the right partners in the system that we could affiliate ourselves with. So, for instance, the person, the organization or the entity that funded us right at the beginning was the Innovation Hub.
Yeah.
And the Innovation Hub is saying, look, we're looking for young entrepreneurs that are out there that have brilliant ideas that are looking to figure out how to commercialize them.
Yeah.
So I agree with her when we talk about that mode of saying, find Big Brother, find somebody who's out there who is able to give you a little bit more guidance and is able to fund you for that initial journey. Look, it's the same as you when you start off with anything, there are going to be learning challenges. There's going to be a point where you say, but how do I figure out how to make this thing work in this particular way? And as long as you always find somebody to ask and you find somebody who can say, but hey, I need to raise this amount of money, where else can I raise it? Who's funding healthcare right now? Who's funding devices for healthcare? And there are people who are able to share that information out there that are able to say, let me point you to Tia because Tia is looking for X, Y, and Z. I mean, you're starting to see the rise of social impact-driven businesses, and on top of that, you see programs like Red Bull Amapico, you see programs like the Innovation Hub, where everybody's saying, how can we help entrepreneurs actually get to that second stage? I don't think that the R&D conversation should be something that holds us back. I think it's up to us to push ourselves to say, but what are the levers that are out there? Who else can I participate with or collaborate with to be able to get this first version of my solution out there?
Yeah. Okay, I have one more, you know, quick question. I'm going to individualize these questions because one specifically for Naily and one specifically from Neil before I hand over to, you know, Hlengi. I know she's got things that she's itching to ask. And the first one I'm going to ask is to Naily. In terms of getting your product from you, you do prosthesis. So in terms of the people that are in need of what you produce, do you deal directly with patients, or do you supply to, let's say, hospitals, for example, and then they're the ones who then interface with the patients, or do people come to you directly? Do you go through medical aids, for example? How do you actually get your product from where you are to the patient?
Okay, so what we do is, in terms of marketing, we market directly to the patient.
Yeah.
Because we want more than just selling the product, we want to educate the patient. So we feel like when it comes to marketing, we need to talk to them directly for them to start understanding and for us to build a relationship with them. But we also understand that we can never just directly take a product from our warehouse and take it directly to the patient. We also need to work with medical specialists, particularly work with oncologists and prosthetists who then take the product to the patient, because we have an understanding that as much as we want to educate the patient, there has to be someone in the middle who has to take more care of the patient and make sure that the prosthetic suits well, the patient responds well to the prosthetic, and does a longer program of checkup. So usually, so our products do medical specialists, and for state patients, we go to hospitals, doing government hospitals, where we work with certain nurses or social workers who do with the patients. And the last thing of the model that we have built is that we have now created a community of understanding that there is this giant, bigger than just doing the product. What are we trying to solve within the product? So for our first product, which is breast prosthetics, it has more of breast cancer. So we have built this community with medical care specialists and also with some organizations such as the Duto Project that helps you reach funds for to get our products and give to patients. To see how then can we start communicating breast cancer to people for them to start understanding that the disease that's there, how it needs to be managed, and how people need to undergo mastectomy on time for the cancer spread.
So no, I like the answer that Nelly gave. You know, she's just highlighting the fact that yes, you can do things on your own, but it's good to have partners in place that will, you know, sort of help you to, you know, advocate on your behalf that actually it's a good product. But for you, Nell, something I was interested to know is, in terms of dispensing of drugs, right? In pharmacy, I think there's something that they call lost point of contact, which tends to be the pharmacist, right? You're sort of depending on how it's done, the sort of that interface with the actual pharmacist is sort of eliminated. So what happens in cases where I know that for certain. You need for certain types of drugs and treatments, every once in a while, yes, it's a repeat, there can be a repeat prescription, but every once in a while the pharmacist needs to actually check to see how is the patient actually reacting to the medicine, you know, all of that stuff. How does that work? And then lastly, what schedule sort of drugs are available through your method?
Yeah. Okay. So you want the good drugs. Anyway, so how it works, our solution is a smart locker that we put inside a clinic or a different facility.
Yeah.
And if you can think of the post boxes with like a center ATM in the middle.
Yeah.
So typically we take pre-packed medicine, we load it inside. It then sends an SMS saying, "Now your medication is ready for collection at Mamelodi Clinic. Here's a one-time PIN."
Yeah.
The patient then would go to the clinic on the day of their collection with that one-time PIN. They'd go to the self-service kiosk or ATM for medicine. They'd enter their cell phone together with their password. It authenticates them. It then pops open a compartment that has their medicine inside. They collect and they're on their way. As you rightly said, it's primarily for repeat patients that are on a repeat chronic medication script. Typically, a script would be about 6 months long. So for the first month, you're effectively seeing a pharmacist, they're explaining to you what the medicine is, how it works, what are going to be the side effects, and what you can expect. And chronically stable means that you've been on the same treatment for a while, the treatment is already responding, and you just have to be on it. If you can think about somebody whose viral load is suppressed from an HIV perspective, they just need to still be on ARVs perpetually, right? But they don't need to see you every day, every month, because they've known how to take their medicine over years or months of treatment. In that particular case, that contact is actually not required because you are going to see that person 6 months again. But what we did is we said, look, let's take a people-centered approach. We know that some people might not be initially comfortable with this. So let's put the locker inside a clinic in such a way that if you really, really do need to speak to somebody, there's somebody just right there. But the value proposition to the patient is saying, hey, there's 5 hours in a queue, but there's 36 seconds right there. So imagine, and when people talk about impact, right, we talk about these 10x sort of multiples. But when you take somebody from 5 hours in a queue to less than 36 seconds, that is way, way beyond a 10x. That's literally starting to say, but how can technology really significantly change how I access my medicine? Obviously, you then layer that conversation a little bit higher and saying, what else is possible at a clinic level? And You have to remember that the people that we're serving, those are the people that whenever somebody launches a new app, they want to launch it in Sandton first. You know, you don't go into Ekasi and start over there. So for us, it is very much about being able to say, how can we empower people to see what technology can do for them? But I think a second layer to your question now about the drugs. So we focus on multiple drugs. So it will be your ARVs, hypertension, gout, TB, diabetes, type 2. So it's a set of different sort of conditions that we treat for, as long as there's a repeat pattern to it and the person is chronically stable within that. So we work with the Department of Health, and that Department of Health then creates a list of what medicine can actually go through the product. We have to control the temperature internally within the lockers.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of IoT there. And then obviously, going into further development, we're looking at some form of interaction on the screen itself, where there could be a very quick three questions: how are you feeling, anything that you want us to check, and then creates an alert for somebody saying, you know what, the patient currently at the locker needs a little bit more attention, can you check out there? And those are very simplistic ways of how technology can play a significant role within a healthcare setting. Still very much understanding that there is a human contact needed within a health service, but also saying, but we can supplement that. And also from a benefit perspective of saying, but here's government being able to think about alternative ways of providing service.
Yeah.
I mean, government is our biggest partner. So we work with the National Department of Health, City of Johannesburg and City of Tshwane, and we're now starting a relationship with the Eastern Cape Department of Health. And what that whole ethos of always saying, but there needs to be partners in each and every layer. So we don't, we have a tech company that's behind the product, but there's still a nurse who gives us insights about how we need to think about developing the new features that are going to come onto the product. So we've been blessed primarily through the relationship with City of Tshwane and City of Johannesburg now to be able to have access to people on the ground who have extensive knowledge about treatment, about people, about humanity. And I think health has that whole strong focus of humanity, that you can't build tech without making sure that the humanity is literally over and post on the unit itself.
Okay, awesome. So I have two interest points that I want to touch on. The first is the actual health of the entrepreneurial ecosystem itself. And then the second touches on exposure. So I'm going to start with Nelly on the line. If you can just kindly just tell us, what has been your biggest market entry challenges, and what can be done to overcome these in order to encourage greater participation in the tech industry?
One of our biggest market entry challenges was that the medical industry is highly regulated. So, for one to ever get to a point where you have a product in the market, you have to go through so many hurdles, licensing of either your product, it has to undergo so many tests, and it's one of the things that makes it quite challenging. But one of the things I always say is that we need to look at a way on how we need to support entrepreneurs, particularly those who are product developers, and by solely creating a community on how we can be able to market their businesses and channel a stronger marketing for them to reach the end user, their target customer. Because it's something that's very challenging to a whole lot of entrepreneurs that I interact with, where they say, I have a good product, I understand my customer very well, but for me to go geographically and get to my customer for them to understand my message and my product offering is very difficult and very expensive. So we need to sort of create a support system in between that, where entrepreneurs can know that, yes, I've created something and it will be easier for me to get to the next level. Because a lot of times you find that entrepreneurs say, I need funding, but it's not funding that they need. They just need someone who gets to spread a word about what they do and help with marketing strategies to make sure that they reach their target customer really well.
Thank you so much. The importance of a marketing strategy. Nayo. Take it away.
I think I'll just compliment that, right? So I think this theme of partners keeps on coming up. And so I'm an engineer by background and very good with the technical stuff, with the product and so on. And I remember when we named our product, we called it Medicube. And when you get into a clinic and somebody's like, what is Medicube, right? And I kept on thinking about how, like, I feel like we got our naming wrong. We got our product description wrong, right? And I remember, like, how we got help with that. So, for instance, when we looked at the entrepreneurial ecosystem, we said, who in the system is helping people with marketing, and can we build a relationship with that? So we then identified that, hey, but Red Bull is one of the biggest marketing companies or biggest events company. Yes, they sell drinks too. But at the same time, they're saying, hey, we have a social program called Red Bull Amapico. We effectively set out to help entrepreneurs with other areas. And I was like, but here's somebody who can help me build my marketing strategy as an engineer. Here is people who are good at events, at launches, and all of these other things. And I know it sounds non-healthcare, but it's very much about, from an entrepreneurial perspective, being able to say, let me really authentically look at what the ecosystem looks like, who in the ecosystem is doing great work, what component of that do I need? So if it's marketing, you go to Red Bull. If it's, let's say, funding for technology development, you go to the Innovation Hub or you go to TIA. If it's scaling, then you know that, okay, I go to CIFA or, let's say, the IDC. And then, you know, so it's that sensitivity of saying, but what does the ecosystem look like? And let me not just close my eye and say I'm in a clinic, I'm in healthcare, but saying, but hey, there are people out there whose sole mandate is to help entrepreneurs become the best version of themselves. And how can you actually tap into that?
Awesome stuff. So there were a number of names that were mentioned there for our listeners, ranging from Innovation Hub, TIA, CIFA, IDC. They can do further research into that. But our last question for the evening, in just 1 minute, Nelly, if you can just tell us, I mean, we first met in San Francisco at a Global Entrepreneurship Summit. If you can just tell us the importance of global exposure and how it has helped you and assisted you in terms of positioning your brand, and then Nayo can tell us a bit afterwards.
The nice thing about global exposure, particularly when I spend time in San Francisco where I met you, we don't build a global perspective on business development. It's so easy that when you are in one place building one thing at your place where you were born and grew up in, that your level of thinking becomes limited. So when you expose yourself, you then look at possible ways on how you can globalize your brand. Then you can so many environments that you can do your brand, that you can also learn from and bring back into your company for it to grow. When you talk to entrepreneurs right now, is to say, don't just look at building a business for the small space you are in. I mean, looking to becoming the Fortune 500. And you can only get that exposure of understanding the Fortune 500 when you're being in such environments and getting to interact with different people who you build a strong networks with, different entrepreneurs from different environments. And there's so much value of working the journey with people from different environments who share the same experiences as you do, because you then get to create collaborations. I mean, you can collaborate with anyone around the world to best build your business, who bring different ideas, and it's something that strengthens your business case.
Thank you so much. The importance of collaboration. Nayo, I met you when you were on your way to an international trip yourself. There's Israel, there's Boston, there's been so many different places that you've been to. Tell us about the importance of that global exposure in your brand positioning.
So remember, we are challenged by the world to compete as South Africans, right? And we were having a conversation about black excellence a while back. And I keep on thinking to myself about how there's always a requirement to represent wherever you go. And there's that Tumani Mina, you know, sort of narrative that we go out there and carry as entrepreneurs. But I also have to agree in that there's a requirement for us to also push our perspectives and challenge ourselves to think bigger and think wider and think about about how we can actually participate as a global or in the global space as an economy. So one thing I liked about Israel, for instance, very small population, but the whole ethos of how they build innovation is so that it is consumed by the rest of the world. So you don't build for your local community, you build for the world to actually just say this is really, really great. And I think that mindset change of saying, yes, it's important to have a South Africa first approach, but for you to be a really, really great entrepreneur, your product needs to carry across multiple geographies and economies, and your product has to almost be South Africa agnostic and be globally relevant, so that you actually do carry that ambassadorship of a South African brand product and to be able to position out globally.
So thank you so much to Neo Hutiri and to Nelly Kolise, who are both entrepreneurs. Nelly is from iMed Tech and Neo is from Technovera, for, you know, just being with us in studio and on the line and just discussing what it means to be a health tech entrepreneur. On the other side of this, we come to the end of the show. Keep it locked. This is The Business Buzz.
The Business Buzz.
We've come to the end of the show. Thank you so much to everyone who was listening to the show. Thank you to Nelly Nkolise, who is from iMed Tech, and also to Neo Hutiri from Technovera for just sharing in the experiences. Klengiwe, your takeaways from tonight's discussion?
So many different takeaways. You know, because in all honesty, we think, oh, capital, 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 but then there's so much more in terms of, you know, like different routes that we can take in terms of starting up. And the highlight for me was on partnership and collaboration and, marketing strategies. I think that was the highlight for me for tonight.
All right, cool. I think that was also a very big theme, the issue that you cannot be attacking this mountain on your own. You definitely need to strategically place yourself. And in terms of those strategic partnerships, I like what Neo was talking about, that if you were to think of what Technovera does and what Red Bull does, they seem so diametrically opposed. But when they're able to just, you know, bring their efforts together, you know, you're actually able to actually, you know, use one of the biggest marketing companies, find one of the companies that markets the best in South Africa, mm-hmm. and actually, you
just
know,
just happens to sell drinks.
Yeah. And actually use some of their expertise to actually then learn from and actually then, you know, push your project for your project forward. So that was a very big takeaway for me, but otherwise I enjoyed it.
I did too.
Yeah. So you can tell us what you think, you know, tell us what you thought about our discussion. If you've ever interfaced with any of the businesses that we're talking to, if you know Neo or if you know Nelly personally, let us know on social media.
So on social media, Facebook, we have VowSM Voice of Vits and Vits Radio Academy. On Twitter, it's at VowFM, and our hashtag is hashtag The Business Buzz. WhatsApp is 084-078-4912, and you can also stream live on www.vowfm.co.za, and our podcasts are available at www.vits.journalism.co.za/business.
Okay, cool. So that's it in terms of the show. I thank you to our amazing team, our executive producer, Elna Schutz, together with our technical producer, Kutluano Serame. Don't miss The Business Buzz, same time, same place next week for more insight into the world of business. Next up on the VowFM lineup, we have Life Beats, so definitely make sure you don't turn that dial. For myself, Mulio Mob, Justice Kavaza, Klengiwe Zondo, and the rest of the team, it's good evening and take care.
Mob Justice on The Business Buzz. Listen to The Business Buzz every Thursday from 6 to 7 p.m. Only on VowFM. The Business Buzz Podcast.